Imagine living in a country where government officials decided to annihilate babies in order to cleanse the nation of unwanted people groups. That's the wicked setting into which Moses was born. And today, on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll will recount this pivotal moment in biblical history. It's the first message in a classic biographical study called Moses, a Man of Selfless Dedication. The villain in this true story was the Pharaoh of Egypt, and the heroes are courageous women who shielded innocent babies from danger. Chuck titled his first message, Misery, Midwives, and Murder.
I am intending to get into a study of the life of a man in crisis, who was, of course, Moses. And it seemed to me that it would be wise to lay the groundwork, to develop the framework, in our minds at least, regarding the world upon which the baby Moses opened his eyes. I don't think we can separate a person from his times. I don't think we should. As in someday future, should God choose to retain his son for a period of time, when someone does a study of our lives, they will not separate that study from our times. You cannot, because the surrounding atmosphere is sort of like the anvil upon which a character is beaten out. This perhaps is more true of Moses than any other Old Testament man. And that's why it seemed important enough to take an evening for it. So I invite you to turn with me to the first few verses of the book of Exodus, the second book of the Old Testament, Exodus. It's a strange name, even though there has been a movie released with that name and you have tossed it around in your Christian vocabulary for some time, you may not know what the word actually means. Exodus means departure, going out. It is a word that is given to the book by the Greeks. When the Greeks translated the Old Testament into the Greek Bible, called the Septuagint, they chose the name Exodus because it seemed to describe to them the theme of the book. This book is the record of the going out or the departure of Israel from the land of Egypt. Now, we know many more details stored up in the reservoir of our mind, but basically that is the theme of the book. That's the climax of the book. When Pharaoh finally let God's people go, they departed from the land of Egypt on their way to their own land, the land of Canaan. Exodus is an exciting book, but we're not studying Exodus per se, we're studying Moses. However, some of these things need to be clarified so that no one misunderstands what the book is all about. The book of Exodus actually is a continuation of the book of Genesis, except for about a 300-year period of silence that rests between the two books. Exodus picks up where Genesis lets off, 350 years later. Let me show you that. Look at Genesis chapter 47, verse 5. A little bit of background will help, because I realize many of you have never examined the book of Genesis. The main character toward the end of the book of Genesis is Joseph. He was mistreated by his brothers. He was sold to slaves, to a band of men who made him a slave, and then he became, through a chain of events, a slave in Egypt. Through a process of time, God greatly honored his life and promoted him out of jail to the right-hand spot of Pharaoh in the land of Egypt. Now, don't miss this. Joseph was a Jew. He was a Hebrew who belonged with his family, the father, Jacob, and his several brothers. But through this torturing experience of a number of years, he was transplanted into Egypt and became the prime minister. He was a very smart man. God gave him insight into handling problems. And Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, recognized this and exalted him to the throne as the prime minister. So he was responsible for the grain and the economy of Egypt. A terrible famine swept the land. Joseph knew it was coming and prepared for it. But back in Canaan, Jacob and his sons were caught in it, and they would die of starvation if they stayed. And through a process of events, there was a contact made with this prime minister in Egypt, not known to be the brother of these men. And after a very warm and moving family reunion, Joseph, the prime minister, invited his brothers and, of course, father to move into Egypt so they might have plenty of grain and a fine spread of land upon which to raise their crops and their sheep. Now, chapter 47, verse 5 and verse 6 provide us, these verses provide us with their invitation to Egypt. You see, if you want to appreciate the Exodus, you need to understand how they got into this land to start with, because the Hebrews were not made for Egypt. They were made for Canaan. Now look at chapter 47, verse 5. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal." Boy, what an offer. "Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, then put them in charge of my livestock." Tremendous thing. The Pharaoh said to Joseph, his right-hand man, "Your family has come. Give them the best of the land. Let them settle in Goshen. And there in that fertile area, they will graze crops and they will be able, in fact, to help raise my livestock. I accept them wholeheartedly, Joseph." Now look at chapter 50 of that book, verse 21. Pharaoh said, "You're welcome. We're glad to have you here." He, along with the prime minister Joseph, who in verse 21 welcomes them, provides them with a beautiful layout. "So therefore," Joseph says to his brothers and to his father, "do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Not only did Pharaoh say to the Hebrews, "You're welcome," the prime minister had no bitterness in his soul, which is a beautiful response to the mistreatment they had given him. And he said to his brothers, "Come on in, I'll look upon you and your family with great compassion." And so it was, they came into the land. Now at that time, they were only a family, a small band of people. These brothers, their father, gathered together their belongings, and they moved as refugees into the land of Egypt. But they weren't stuck off in some camp, you know, to ferret out a life. They were given a beautiful piece of land, and there they lived. Everything rocked along well for about 71 years. But you will notice in verse 22, Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. That's his full lifetime. When he died, he was 110 years old. I take it from a study of this book that he was 39 when they arrived. He lived for 71 years more and then died. Verse 26, so Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. Now, upon his death, things began to change. First of all, the Hebrew people began to grow in number. These brothers married, and the offspring grew in number. And by, they became a mighty people in the land of Egypt. to the dismay and to the disappointment of Pharaoh, the king. Joseph wasn't there to give a good word for them. He was long since gone in the passing of time. And by, they were looked upon with great prejudice by the Egyptians. Now, let me show you why. There are a couple of reasons. You might have missed this. Chapter 46, verse 31. Before Joseph died, he told his brothers something about Egyptian culture. And I fear they may have forgotten it. I was told when we went into a new area, the land of Japan, that for the first time in our lives, we were the foreigners. And there were certain things we needed to know. That was a good counsel for us as young men in the military. I'll never forget that time that the colonel stood before us and described to us a new way of life in which we were not in charge. We were guests of another land. Now, that's the way it was when Joseph met with his brothers and told them about Egypt. Look at what he said in 46:31. Joseph said to his brothers, to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock. And they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come about when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? Here's what you say. Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now. Because we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. It's the last part of that verse that interests me. When Pharaoh says to you, what is your occupation, fellas? Don't tell him that you're shepherds. Tell him that you're keepers of livestock. Now, why would he say that? Well, he tells us in verse 34, because shepherds were loathsome to the Egyptians. Let me background this just a minute, may I? At that time, the Egyptian state was a cultural place to live. It was the Nob Hill of the world. Educationally, it was on top of it. Their advanced hieroglyphics, their fine universities, their beautiful economic situation was such that they didn't want any group of refugees to come and to corrupt it. And their feeling was that if you get into this land, a whole group of shepherds, that we will begin to lower the image of Egypt. Kyle and Dalich, very capable writers in the Old Testament, add this thought. The dislike of the Egyptians to shepherds arose from the fact that the more completely the foundations of Egypt rested upon agriculture, the more did the Egyptians associate the idea of rudeness and barbarism with the very name of a shepherd. This is not only attested in various ways by the monuments on which shepherds are constantly depicted as lanky and withered, distorted, emaciated, and sometimes almost ghostly figures. They were frogs, I guess you would say, in light of what we have heard tonight. They were the off-scouring. And we don't want them in this land in number. Now, Pharaoh had his livestock, and so Joseph says to them, look, when he asks you what your work is, just tell him, you handle livestock. That'll work great. Don't push the fact that you're shepherds. I think a good way to illustrate it is that Ed, our minister to students, has a very interesting sideline interest. He raises chickens. Now, it isn't everybody that loves to live next to people that raise chickens, right? Let's say that Ed were to move up to Sunny Hills, okay? And in case you don't know, the Sunny Hills area is a rather nice area in the Fullerton section of Southern California. And Edward would say to me, look, what counsel do you give me? I'm going to move up there. I would say, Ed, I'll tell you what, buddy. Why don't you tell your neighbors that you're a minister? Don't tell them you raise chickens, Ed. Tell them that you're a minister, and that will probably help a lot. And then it occurred to me in that illustration that sure as the world, that rooster would crow that next morning and give it all away. You know, it's amazing. They would tip their hands. Now, that's the way it was with these Hebrews. When you go into the land, they have a loathsome feeling toward the shepherds. So why don't you change your approach and call yourself keepers of livestock? I make a point of this because I am convinced as time passed, this growing number of shepherds began to be an increased irksome problem to the people of Egypt. Ah, but there was something deeper than that. Go to chapter 1 of Exodus and you'll see what I mean. Look at chapter 1 for the second reason that times became hard for the Hebrews. Not only did they come as shepherds and maintain that, verse 8 tells us a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. In the passing of time, after the death of Joseph, these brothers and their families settled in the land. But Pharaoh passed on also, and another Pharaoh came. And passed on. And another Pharaoh came until finally, after a period of 3 and more centuries, Joseph was an unknown. And this bilateral policy that had been established between Joseph and the Pharaoh was long since forgotten. And this new Pharaoh came who had no heart for Joseph or the men of God, the people of the Hebrews. And he was threatened by their presence. Verse 9, he said to his people, behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and in the event of war, they also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. As a result of their shepherd trade and the hatred of this Pharaoh or the threat of this Pharaoh, a whole new way of life came to pass for the people of the Hebrews. Notice the change. It's a sad scene. Verse 11, they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. And they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. Now, a whole scene took place, the likes of which I'm sure none of us could imagine. All of a sudden, there was an invasion of a new policy. These taskmasters came in. Archaeologists have helped us a great deal in understanding this section. They have unearthed obelisks and monuments and columns upon which have been etched all sorts of figures. One was most interesting that I discovered. It was a mural. A whole number of laborers working under two superior officers who carried heavy lashes. And these that were working were making bricks on this obelisk, on this column. And these two that were holding the whips were crying out, and it's actually written in the hieroglyphics. It's written, work without fainting. Think of that. They had known peace and joy and relaxation in their land of Goshen as long as Joseph lived, and then by and by a change came. And before long, taskmasters, and they no longer drove sheep and led sheep. They now began to make bricks under the whip of the taskmaster. It's a sad scene, really. But let me remind you of God's great promise to those Hebrews. Hold your place here and look at Genesis 15. There's another part of the story that you wouldn't get from Exodus 1. And it is the background to the birth of Moses. Genesis 15, verse 13. Way back, centuries before Exodus chapter 1, God spoke to Abram, the father of the Hebrews, and he unveiled a prophecy regarding the people of the Hebrews. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve." Now notice, "and afterward they will exodus." There's the word. They will depart with many possessions. Centuries before, God said to Abraham, "My son, your progeny will grow in number and they will go into a land in which they were not born. They will be strangers in a foreign land," and that's Egypt. "But they won't stay there forever. After several hundred years under the yoke of that brutal people, they will be delivered. They will come out of that land." And that's the part Moses was to play in leading the people out of the land of Egypt. Go back to Exodus 1 for a moment. Let's look at life under the pharaohs and the taskmasters. Not only were they afflicted with hard labor, verse 11, they built two cities, verse 11. But it's remarkable that the brutality of the taskmasters did not stop the growth of the people. Verse 12, "The more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel." It means in verse 12 that the Egyptians, when they saw the growing number of Israelites, looked with dread upon that growth. The Hebrew word translated dread is the word kutz. It's the word that means to have an abhorrence for, an horror, a sickening feeling. When the officers of Egypt would look at the growth of Israel from month to month and year to year, there would be this sickening dread within them, feeling that's getting out of hand. Our plan isn't working. We've got to stop that growth because by and by they will overthrow us. And so the brutality was increased. Maybe it's reading too much psychology into the scriptures, but I think that it is quite interesting the light this lends to the matter of brutality. Isn't it interesting that brutality frequently in scripture stems from fear? It was the abhorrence within the heart of the Egyptians that led to their brutality. I find that interesting. That which caused them to increase the labor and increase the intensity of brutality was, frankly, nothing more than the fear of those people. If you are given to brutality, and here, forgive me if this is stretching it too far, I think it would be wise for you to back off and look at what you may be afraid of. Brutal people are often driven by fear. Fear of losing something they want very much. Fear of themselves. Fear of something that they can't hold on to. And so it was among the Egyptians. The fear of losing their land caused them to drive hard at this point.
You're listening to Insight for Living and the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. On today's program, we've just kicked off a biographical study on the life of Moses, a man of selfless dedication. By the way, if you're wondering why Chuck's voice sounds a little different, it's because this classic study was presented and recorded many years ago. All 20 CDs are ready for purchase, so you can listen to the entire study at your own pace. To purchase the collection of CDs for the series on Moses, call us at 800-772-8888. Here at Insight for Living, it's become our tradition to provide a companion Bible study workbook with every teaching series Chuck presents. And this spiral-bound workbook for Moses, a man of selfless dedication, is part of our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies. This workbook is perfectly suited for your private Bible study devotions or to use in a group setting where it will stimulate great conversation among your friends. You can purchase a copy right now by going to insight.org/workbooks. And then for just a few more days, we're pleased to offer a brand new booklet from Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll. It's called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. Early in their marriage, Cynthia struggled to conquer a serious bout with depression. It turned out that medicine made things worse, and unwise counseling exacerbated her condition. Cynthia tells a heartwarming story about the healing power of God's forgiveness and how it transformed her relationships and her outlook on life. Again, the booklet is called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness, and you're invited to request a copy right now when your request includes a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living. Here's the address to write to us. It's Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. Or you can call us at 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Chuck Swindoll continues his classic biographical study called Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication, Thursday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Misery, Midwives, and Murder, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.